The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Раз, два, раз, два. Ну, тут паузы 47 тактов, мы их играть не будем.
Почему?
Да. Ну, что ты скажешь о смерти Изольды?
Очень уж долго помирает.
Классический.
До свидания. It's the final film of Communist Month. Goodbye, communist lovers, after this. But thanks for joining us for another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. Today we're going to be discussing 1938's Volga Volga, directed by Grigory Alexandrov. But before we do that, let's do this. It's a little segment we like to call Heralds and Denouncements. Do-do-do-do! Bam!
Oh, it sounded like a tuba, like the movie. Yep. I like that.
Sorry. I'm a little low today because I'm kind of hungover. So, probably sound like a flat tire.
It's the perfect way to do our final Russian communist movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hungover.
Did you get drunk on vodka? That'd be appropriate.
I actually got drunk on bourbon, but, you know. I could say it was vodka.
Still counts, I guess.
Terrible American.
Sorry. I watched the movie Spawn from 1987.
Yeah.
It was aggressively a 90s film. All the special effects, and it looked like some sort of bad, like, After Effects 1.0.
Mm-hmm.
Just horrible amateur hour backgrounds, and the director had some sort of like cool, I can't even remember his fucking name now, but he's got some sort of like cool guy initials in the middle. I can't even remember what they were now. It's like AZ or something like that. Yeah, there it is.
Like Amazon.
Mark AZ Dippy. And I was like, God, this guy sounds like he wears like a suit jacket with jeans and wrap around Oakley's. I was just like, oh.
And an Ed Hardy t-shirt underneath.
Yeah, yeah. I was just like, oh man, everything about this movie is bad. There wasn't really anything that I was just like, oh, this is like something that stands out in the middle of it. I was just like, this is bad. It's like one of those like bad, you know, like superhero movies that isn't interesting in any way, but there's also all this other bad crap on top of it. I was like, man, no, yeah. I don't like anything about this.
Roger Ebert gave it 3.5 stars.
He sure did.
Oh, boy.
Choice quote, as a visual experience, Spawn is unforgettable.
Well,
that is true.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. I was in a bar like a month ago, and Spawn was on one of the TVs with no sound or whatever, classic bar style. But it was the part where he's like fighting the big demon in hell, and they're like flying through hell and throwing things at each other. And I was like, oh boy, this CGI is pretty amazing.
Pretty egregious. It's like an episode of Buffy, but without any of the like buffiness of it. It's like that level of cinematography and special effects.
I think
effects.
The cinematography is good in Buffy. I do not think the special effects are good in Buffy.
Yeah. Well, I would even say the cinematography here is worse. Like the lighting and all the interiors looks like bad porn sets. Like it does look like it should have been like a television movie or something like that. Like it definitely should not have been released in theaters.
Yeah, I laughed really hard at the part when he gets thrown on the spikes and he's like, Jesus on the cross. He's like, ugh.
Apparently Seth MacFarlane has been trying to make a Spawn remake since 2007.
Seth MacFarlane, or Todd McFarlane?
Yeah. Seth MacFarlane would be also.
Oh yeah.
Funny.
I was like, because
like he's been coming out like every year with some quotes like, "This year definitely gonna get it off the ground," like for like 11 years. Someone really, really thinks they're onto something here.
Steven did the same thing to me, and it tricked me because I forgot about who Todd McFarlane was. He said something about Seth MacFarlane being in Spawn, and I was like, he was in Spawn? That's weird.
Yeah, it's Seth MacFarlane wanted to make something that would probably get done.
Yeah, it's true.
Basil?
A million ways to die in the Spawn.
A million ways to return from death.
Yep. I'm gonna pick up the baton that I dropped off a little while ago and herald Apocalypse Now. Boom.
Boom.
Movie's awesome. I finally got around to rewatching the whole thing. Watched it with Haley, started from the beginning, and it's great. Like, the things I said before are still applicable. There's even more weird stuff that happens later in the movie with cinematography. There's, like, one whole scene when it gets to this bridge that's just, they're, like, in a trench with some other soldiers, and there's some kind of, like, a spinning light going, and that's, like, the only light source, so, like, just like every few seconds you see Martin Sheen's face, and then other than that it's like almost pitch black, and it's so unnerving looking. Like, I don't know, the cinematography in that movie is pretty incredible. I was like fully on like, oh, this is like one of my 10 favorite movies of all time, but then it got to the Marlon Brando part and that part is too long. Like, some parts of it are good, but like it takes up, for a movie that's like a series of like pretty short vignettes up to that point, like the Brando stuff takes like half an hour, and you could really have done it in like 10, maybe 15 minutes, and it would be like much more concise but still get the same point across. And also Brando's just like a silly actor. Like, I wish they'd cast someone else because he's really bad in it.
Yeah. Famously but, so.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like the reason that they shot him all in the dark because he gained so much weight or whatever and didn't look like Colonel Kurtz anymore, like the cinematography in that still looks cool, like his like weird wet sweaty head that he's like rubbing and that's like all you see of him, that's still pretty cool looking, but like his performance is really bad. But other than that, yeah, like the first 2 hours and 20 minutes or so of Apocalypse Now, that's like a solid, you know, top tier 5-star movie for me.
Nice.
And it got dragged down to 4.5 by the ending, but still. Next time I do acid, I can just watch it again.
Do you, so you prefer Armin Shimmerman in the Kurtz role to Marlon Brando?
I don't get that joke.
He's Principal Snyder, the actor who plays Principal Snyder in Xander's
Dream. Oh, right,
Dream.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's true. That is a funny part.
I got no Harold Zordon announcements this week.
Okay. I'm going to denounce a movie called Confessions. I had it pulled up on my phone and then Letterboxd app quit. Directed by Tetsuya Nakashima. It's weird because Confessions actually reminds me of two of my favorite movies, Speed Racer and Noriko's Dinner Table, but it's like if someone watched those and then made them without the talent. Specifically, like, the first 30 minutes of Confessions is like throwing a ton of information at you, like Speed Racer, except for the way that they do this is mostly just having a woman just say everything that's happened up until that point. So it's like you're watching a movie, except for instead of like watching a movie, you're watching images and someone is sitting next to you explaining to you the plot of the movie in real time. Which for me personally like makes it really hard to follow the information. At least Inception has dialogue. This is mostly monologue. This is just her talking to a group of students.
Like and if then it being was like, all Leo.
Oh! and then it does sort of the Noriko's dinner table thing of just sort of like cutting in these like scenes, sometimes flashbacks and sometimes like less relevant stuff, and like it stylistically doesn't work here at all, unlike that movie, which I think is really good. Apparently I'm the one of the only people on my Letterboxd who doesn't like this movie, but I was kind of surprised that it was so well liked, because it gets a little bit better after the first act, but a lot of the movie is this woman telling you things, just like what's happened to her so far, what she's going to do next, how people are feeling, how she's feeling, and I'm like, what is this movie that's like 50 minutes of someone talking at me? I don't like that. Show, don't tell. It's a classic of writing.
It's just like a filmed version of a Japanese one-person show.
Yeah. It's adapted from a book, and I don't think they did a very... I don't think they spent a lot of time actually adapting it. They're like, what if she just reads the book out loud?
Yeah. Always the classic approach.
Yep. Screenplay solved.
They had written the second and third act, and they're like, I don't know how to get into the first act. And someone was like, copy, paste from just the book. Just cut out some parts we don't need. Anyway, Ilya, this is your pick, right?
This was mine, I think, right?
Yeah. Bring us home.
All right. Sure will. So, Volga Volga came out in 1938. Pretty significant movie in like the Soviet movie canon. The two leads were like the two major actors of the time, Lyubov Orlova, who's apparently one of Charlie Chaplin's favorite actresses, which is really funny, and Igor Ilyinsky, who was like a major theater actor and then later became like pretty famous movie actor, came from like this Meyerhold theater school and was like a hugely influential dude. And then this movie was also or kind of became famous for being Joseph Stalin's favorite movie. So what this movie is plot wise is, I mean, there's like, it kind of tells a story of these two groups of performers who both like live in this little city out east, and the guy who's like in charge of the like amateur local talent and is like a local bureaucrat, he gets invited to Moscow to this Olympiad, so-called, where he's supposed to bring like performers with him for like a contest. And at first he's reluctant, he really wants to like go to Moscow, but doesn't really think that there's any like anyone who's talented at all in that city. He's then mobbed by these different people. One group who are like classical music performers and like trained musicians, and one group that are like amateur performers but are all like also very skilled singers, dancers, and like musicians as well. And the two groups start kind of a rivalry as to who's supposed to perform at this Olympiad. They travel to Moscow via the Volga River, which giving the movie its name. And like it basically also built around the main actress Lubova Orlova composing the song, but being like kind of too scared to admit that she wrote it, and like ended up, this song ended up becoming like somewhat of a hit when it gets to Moscow. Yeah, I think that's probably the plot.
Woo.
I'm indifferent to this movie. Like, it's the beginning of the movie is like an overture explaining to you who the characters are. And like, when it starts off, it's like, we're going to get you right into the movie. We're going to have this short overture explaining everything, and then we're gonna just get going. And I was like, this is funny, I like this idea. But then like the overture itself was like not actually that short, like it's like 8 minutes, and then like I had trouble remembering who the characters were, even though I was paying pretty close attention to the overture at that point. And that was sort of ended up being how I felt about the movie in general, was that I liked it theoretically. Like there would be these moments and scenes and I'd be like, man, I really like the idea of this, but something about the execution just makes it like confusing for me as to like what is happening at certain points. And it's not like things would keep happening where I'd be like, that's fun, but I wouldn't like actually laugh. Like,
right.
When the bureaucrat is in the town and like the waiter or something is singing to him and he's like, everyone is here is talented, we've got a barbershop quartet, and he like opens the curtains and all the chefs like jump out of the little window and I'm like, that's awesome, but I wanted to like feel that it was awesome, and I didn't really. So I ended up pretty much in the middle on this. Sleepy Patrick.
I liked this movie, I'd say. I guess I'm slightly on the liking side. I didn't like it that much, but I just, you know, I thought it was fun. I can see why Stalin liked this movie. It's a fun movie.
He's a fun guy.
A lot of wacky stuff happens in it. Yeah, that's Stalin. He's a wacky guy. I like wacky movies. The gag of the steamship falling apart, I thought was pretty funny. Every time that happened, every time somebody fell off of the boat because it was breaking.
If Stalin had lived
American
long enough,
quality.
Superman would have been his new favorite movie.
I guess so.
Step Brothers.
Right.
Yeah, I thought there was some pretty like rad stunts in this movie too. Like I was like, wow, that was really well choreographed. And I also thought the part where they were trying to, trap him so they could dance and sing for him was pretty funny, where he's just, like, running away constantly. I enjoyed the hijinks, and I liked the lead actress. I thought she did a good job. What was her name?
Lubov Orlova.
Lubov Orlova, yeah. I thought she was good. I kind of liked that, like, everything was real heightened, you know. It was just, like, sort of a classical, like, musical style where everything is, like, big and, like, out there, and they're, like, playing to the, you know, the back of the theater or whatever, and I was like, this is fun. That's nice. So, yeah.
Yeah, I like that everyone was on the same page with that.
Yeah.
As opposed to other 1930s movies we've watched.
Yeah. I wish I hadn't been sick today so that I could have enjoyed it more, as I feel like I would have if I wasn't, like, didn't have to constantly close my eyes to keep my head from hurting.
Mm-hmm. You should just get drunk right now like I'm doing. Oh, hair of the dog, man.
Oh, God. Mr. Tom again.
Yep. Yeah, I'm basically with Ruben. Like, there are parts that I thought were like, oh, this is like kind of charming, but I felt it in an intellectual way. Like, I wasn't actually charmed, but I was like, in theory, this is charming. This is a thing that would feel charming usually. And I felt that way about the whole movie. Like, you know, once the central conflict is sort of set up, I was like, oh, I feel like I get where this movie's going. And then I went there and I was like, all right, I got it, you know, like these people aren't being appreciated because there's some notion that because they do something else, they aren't genuine artists. But then by the end of the movie, you know, people are going to learn their lesson. Regular people can be great artists as well, and everyone can come together and really, you know, feel the power of collectivist communism via valorizing the proletariat. And I was like, yep, I got this movie. I was right.
Yeah, I'll join the chorus of between feeling kind of indifferent and kind of liking it. So, right there with you all. I thought that this was probably of the four movies we watched for this month, the most, like, obviously, the most obvious with its communist themes. Like, sure. Pretty much everything in this movie is about contrasting, like, the communist way of getting at things and the wrong way of getting at things. Everything from like the way this guy is like portrays this like old school bureaucrat, which is like supposed to, which in the end of the movie they basically say we're gonna sweep this, not, I don't think they say junk, I think, yeah, sweep this junk away. So, like, the mission statement is quite clear. And also, when the ship that is, like, a gift from the Americans, and that's, you know, this was still the time when the Soviet Union and America were friends, right? This movie actually even came out in the USA, too. Nice. 1941. But, like, because it's an American thing, it keeps falling apart, right? Because they build like fancy ships but they don't hold up, you know. And mass production of instruments is not good either because they end up mostly being junk as well,
right?
And so on and so forth. And you know, like, really there's a lot of that here. And I mean, I couldn't help but like picture like Stalin watching this and be like, yep, agree with that. Yes, good point. All good points. And then him actually getting a shout out by one of the ships being named after him probably was like, yeah, man, I'm digging this movie. This is a lot to like about this. But yeah, I actually liked the musical performances. The dancing was pretty anarchic and like kind of crazy at times. Like I really enjoyed that. I thought that I mean, a lot of the actors in this seemed like they were still perhaps not quite used to being in sound film. Like they're like have very expressive faces and like used to like very herky jerky like movements to like portray like, oh, like he's like a comic character or he's like a whatever character, I don't know. But the main to like both Orlova and Ilyinsky, who plays the bureaucrat guy, are relatively more, I guess, a relatively subtle, more subtle actors, and quite expressive. And I thought that was, yeah, I like those two. But yeah, I agree that it's pretty formulaic for the most part. Mm-hmm. And most of the songs don't quite really land, and most of the humor, though some is lost in translation, like the English translation is pretty terrible at times. Sure. Is like, I guess it's still, some of it is funny, and I even knew some of the lines from this movie without ever having watched it, just by growing up in Russia. Like people still like quote this movie. But it has not aged terribly well, I guess, in that regard. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I prefer when I'm not going to understand the translation if it goes to a place that I really don't understand it. Like in this movie, there's a part where I can't remember her real name, but her fake name is Dunya, is arguing with the dude about who's better at music. And she's like, your music's so bad it'll kill the flies. And he's like, your music is so bad it'll turn milk sour. And I was like, okay, yes, whatever. But there's a line in Bikiza where someone says, like, it's going to turn your mustache upside down, about to insult someone. And I'm like, what? That doesn't even make any sense. And I'm like, I like that way better than the thing that I sort of understand, but don't get the, like, context of.
Yep.
Yeah.
What were you saying, Basil?
Damn, I lost it. I feel like Stalin saying this is his favorite movie is actually like a lie. Like it's like a publicity thing of this, like this, because I mean everything, you know, from the Chris Marker movie and everything else you read about Stalin, he like watched a lot of movies, and I really want to pretend that like his favorite movie is like a weird Eisenstein movie, but he can like say that publicly because, you know, he had to like champion a movie that's like a for real, like these are the beats that your movie should hit to be a good communist movie, but he's like secretly watching October over and over again or something. Yeah.
The director of this actually worked with Eisenstein a lot, and he became like Stalin's main go-to guy for like directing stuff that he wanted to see filmed.
Yeah.
Or even more extreme, like his favorite movie is like Stagecoach, like yeah, the most American movie. I just can't tell anyone.
I was gonna say, yeah, like, because actually, as far as this goes, like, the shots are, like, fairly basic, but in a way that I found, like, oh, this is kind of fun in, like, a way that, like, a lot of 30s movies are. Like, the plainness of the cinematography didn't strike me as, like, boring in the same way that, like, Monsieur Verdot or something did. Like, there's just, like, there's still, like, a contrast and a depth to it that I thought was, like, oh, this is, like, plain, but, like, in a regular way. Like, in a, like, way where I'm not, like, annoyed by its plainness. Hmm. And there's a fun shot early on that where they're on the ferry, and it starts with, like, kind of a close shot of them in the haystack, and it's, like, pulling back. And at first it looks like a crane shot, but it's actually the ferry, like, moving away from the camera rather than the other way around. And I was like, oh, that's kind of a funny trick.
Hmm.
I just wanted to say that I agree with Patrick that I like the stunts. There's a part where I think the bureaucrat is climbing up the paddle wheel on the boat, and I was like, whoa, that's impressive.
Yeah. When he jumps off
climbing
the boat
is hard, and climbing up something moving is very hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you learn in theater school, is how to climb up very difficult objects.
Yeah. There's a part of the part near the end when her name's like Selka, right?
Strelka,
sorry. Yeah, when she jumps on the river and then they jump after her, when the bureaucrat guy jumps in, he jumps in like butt first, and it looks for sure like he's going to hit himself on the side of the boat, but then he doesn't, and I was like, whoa, that was...
That was close.
That was a dangerous...
Yeah. Would be weird to, like, die while making stunts for a movie like Volga Volga. Oh,
that's true. Where
you wouldn't expect someone to be in that kind of danger, really.
Right. It's not like a Buster Keaton movie.
Yeah.
I like all the bicycle stuff, especially the parts where it's really obvious that she's not bicycling. Like, oh, yeah. She's pedaling. She's,
like, sitting on a stationary. Like,
yeah, she's pedaling that the bicycle would be going really fast, but it's going just like normal walking speed next to him. But she's like pedaling like crazy. And it's, she's just barely keeping up with the bureaucrat dude. I also like that scene because she's like, people from my town are talented. Like, they can sing like this. And then she sings and he's like, no one can sing like that. And I'm like, wait, what? She just sang like that. You heard her.
Yeah, that joke goes on for
a while. Yeah. Yeah.
I guess that's how adamant he is to refuse the talents of the proletariat. He's like,
yeah.
A whole city is doing cool things at me, and I just think they're drunk and want them to leave me alone.
Yep. How sad that the Soviet Union ended up becoming basically a country full of dudes like that bureaucrat rather than the other way around.
Yeah, because it's totally like a movie that's like, like, you know, careerist politics are the worst. Like, you just want to be close to Moscow, you, like, you know, power-grabbing idiot. But that's not how it ended
then,
up
like,
working at all.
That's exactly what it was then in the end.
Yep. Yeah. All those power-grabbing idiots in charge of everything.
One of my few notes is when she's going around the town to try to grab people to perform. There's a guy who's working with animals, maybe, with like a big long beard. I can't remember his name. And when she talks to him, he's like, oh, oh, oh. And I was like, is this where Jabba the Hutt comes from? Is this like a Star Wars influence? Oh, 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 oh. Donya.
Strelka is such a weird name. Like, Strelka means like clock arm, or you know, like, it's like so such a strange name. But I guess maybe
you
it's
can't
like
avoid
her nickname
the coming
or something.
Of communism. Like it's like a counting clock. It's gonna strike a communist o'clock at some point.
You can't fight it, you idiots. Proletariat's taken over.
Strelka was one of the two dogs that the Soviet Union shot into space.
Nice.
There were one was called Belka, which is a name for I can't remember the English word for this right now. It is squirrel. Yes. That's the name I was looking. And Strelka means clock arm. Weird.
Was it after this movie or just in...
I don't know when they shot him at this. Well, obviously after this movie, but probably actually maybe they named her in favor because this movie was huge, right? So quite possibly.
Yeah, we're sending Strelka into space. Their favorite female heroine. She's right up there.
Singing songs. Movie.
It's like calling somebody Little Hand or something.
Yeah.
Tick tock.
Yep.
It was a character.
Like that.
Go ahead, Ruben.
I was just going to say, you like that great comedy of they're complaining about something on the ferry, and he's like, the only thing that ever happens on a ferry is sometimes this thing breaks, and then it breaks.
Yeah, that's
a good comedy.
Do that joke every time.
They
I know
lot.
Every shoal in this river.
That's. I feel like it has the same quality of like a joke that's not funny the first time, but like if they tell it 10 times, it kind of becomes funny.
Classic.
The second shoal.
Stepping on a rake?
It's both.
Stepping on a rake, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Her boyfriend guy is a real dick.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, yeah. Hate that guy.
Like, when they're kissing at first and then they started fighting, I was like, oh, they're just like kind of joke fighting. But then he was like really serious. He's like, no, you're not an artist. I'm the real artist.
I kind of wish they would have swept him away as well at the end.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, clearly when, like, he's portrayed as being a douche, right? They don't, like,
right,
no
yeah,
one
yeah.
who's, like, by this movie's, like, ideals or whatever, he's, like, this pretentious guy who, like, only fancies Western composers and whatever. And so, like, clearly he's not, like, the right dude, but then he like changes his mind or whatever and like accepts her later. That was like, that's kind of a shitty cop out. Would have been cooler if she's just like, I don't need you, loser.
Yeah.
I'm gonna marry this bearded dude.
This movie is
cosmopolitan,
progressive enough to recognize the idea that like a woman can be a really good at a job that a man typically does, but not good enough to realize that she doesn't have to just marry a guy because he likes her.
Yeah.
Progressive labor politics, regressive marriage politics.
Yeah.
Well, you still need those babies. You can't have communism without reproductive futurity.
Fair enough.
Yep. The children are our future, no matter what.
Man, that kid was crazy. That 6-year-old kid or whatever that's like playing the piano and then like doing the like work, like conducting of the orchestra and whatever. Like they show him actually playing the piano too, right? So I think he's like for real, real good.
Yeah, as opposed to, I mean, some of the actors are like pretty good dancers, but then when it cuts to their feet, it's clear that they're like using a body double to like do the more intricate footwork. But I'm pretty sure when he's playing the piano, it's just that kid with like, you know, fingers and everything.
Unless they had someone else's arms like from the bottom of the shot, like playing.
But just still insert, had tiny, like... tiny hands that look like children's.
I didn't look very closely at his hands, so I don't know. Could be.
You have a man's hands. A child with the hands of a man. This is like hairy knuckles. You're like, I don't think that kid. Something's not right here.
It's like a wedding ring on one of his fingers.
It's married.
That little Dunya was a pretty good dancer too.
Yeah, like she was great.
3-year-old girl.
Yeah.
I'm Dunya. I was actually hoping that would be the twist. That it was like it's written by this little kid alone. I just love Volga so much.
Yeah.
Anyone else get black cat, white cat vibes from this movie?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Especially at the end when they're like on the boat like playing and everyone's like rolling over, like the scene where they're both like running after the bureaucrat. Like a lot of it is like this. Like super absurd, like Kusturica style, very high comic energy, like type thing, and very musical, obviously. Just not as good as Black Cat, White Cat, but still pretty fun.
I got the Black Cat. Your point is good, but I got the Black Cat, White Cat vibes at the beginning because we have a bunch of comic stuff happening on a boat, and then you have pigs, and I was like, hey. Some big pigs.
Yep.
Maybe this is Costa Rica's favorite movie also. That wouldn't surprise me. He's kind of a weirdo. Someone's
like, it's your favorite Costa Rica, yeah, Volga. He's pretty weird. He lives in his own village, right?
He constructed his own village. And
you can only live there if you get an invitation. Mm-hmm.
I want to live in Costa Ricaville.
Yeah.
Whatever it's called. But.
I didn't pull anything up for Amir Costa Rica Volga Volga.
He's keeping it close to the vest.
Yeah, he's keeping it close. That's what I was going to say.
Close to the chest. Never stop making that dumb joke about Dark Knight.
Yes, it's a really good joke.
Just a highlight of like what a weirdo.
This is a review.
Like, antisocial.
Yeah, did you just get the
Black Cat,
independent
White Cat
review?
Yeah, someone comparing it to Volga Volga.
Nice.
Yes.
So I mean, he's like the perfect age. I would not be surprised at all if he grew up like watching this movie a bunch of times. And relating to it. Maybe his two favorite movies are this and La Talente.
Yeah.
Movies about rivers.
And animals.
Just need a movie about a wedding to add that. Four Weddings and a Funeral is another favorite movie.
Yeah. I was just thinking like all of Shakespeare, I think. Yeah. Is where a lot of Black Cat White comes from, is Shakespeare's comedies.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah. Magical forests, literally.
I keep thinking that Patrick is asleep, and then every once in a while he turns towards the camera and says something.
Yeah, I'm just closing my eyes because I'm trying not to throw up.
So. Oh man, no vomiting on podcast.
No vomiting on the podcast.
Yeah.
My stomach is
flip. Podcast is for emetophobes, so.
Yeah.
Did you party hard like Andrew W.K. would like you to last night?
Too hard. In too short a span of time.
And he wore a construction man's outfit. I saw it on Snapchat.
Yep, I snapped it.
To valorize the proletariat?
That's right.
You were seizing the means and, of bourbon production.
And the village people. Seizing the means. He was honoring both of them. Celebration. All right. Is that it for Communist Month? Do we have anything else to say about Volga Volga?
I don't think so. I mean, it's a very straightforward movie.
Yeah.
Maybe Ilya has some things.
I just liked the montage at the end of when the song is being played by all these different, like all these ships on the river are all playing that song suddenly. And like the way that's edited together, that it all sounds differently, but still kind of flows together. Like the sound editing of that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I also want to just say, I did think the scene where the music gets like blown out into the river and
Stelka's that's the scene like, immediately preceding it. Yeah.
She's like, the song is gone, but then you see like the pieces of music being like picked up by everyone, and you see it like stuck onto timbers and I think like an anchor. And I was like, this is really kind of beautiful. Like, she thinks her song has disappeared, but it's actually like spread to everywhere. I was like, oh, that's a nice little metaphor there.
I mean, Soviet Union was pretty good with elaborate sound design in general. I recently listened to a piece that was like basically like weird music, but constructed through like a whole town coming together and like ringing bells at the right time and like firing giant cannons at the right time, and like it produces a melody, but it's like all weird enormous objects. And I was like, that's pretty crazy to make a song with guns. The timing for that would be pretty hard to pull off,
like 18, and expensive,
like if you fuck it up.
You just fired a bunch of bullets for nothing.
It just reminds me of there's a joke in Calvin and Hobbes where he's listening to the 1812 Overture and he's like, are those cannons? They played this in a crowded like music hall? Like, the 1800s were awesome.
The last movie this movie reminded me of was Ratatouille. I wanted this movie to end with. I now realize that not everyone can compose, but a great composer can come from anywhere.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, Steven sent me a really cool woman doing a Ratatouille Halloween costume.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, she's like a chef, but then when you turn out the lights, she has like a glow-in-the-dark thing in her chef hat that's like a silhouette of a rat.
Yeah.
It's like,
that's pretty cool.
This is awesome. Yeah.
I agree. One of the best costumes that I saw on Twitter.
Yep.
Yeah.
I like
the rat's name is Ratatouille.
I still like think of that picture that woman posted on Twitter where she went as the Babadook to like a party, but the rest of the party had more of a grown-ups drinking wine vibe or whatever. And she like went as the full-on Babadook with makeup and everything. It's just like sitting there.
Someone did a sequel to that. I'm sure the sequel version of it was intentional, where someone was like, I went to what I thought was a grown-up drinking wine party, but it was actually a Babadook party. And so it was like 11 people dressed up as the Babadook, and then just one person in like a sweater vest, like eating cheese.
Liz.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. I have no idea. I guess maybe Here Comes Mr. Jordan will be our next one being released, right?
Yeah. Oh,
wow. Yep.
Okay. So Here Comes Mr. Jordan is our next podcast. If you want to catch that film before we release it. And then, of course, you can check out all of our podcasts and writings and videos on our website, loosecannons.net. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe using your podcast listening application and give us a 5-star rating review on iTunes. We really do appreciate it. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at loosecannonspodcast@gmail.com. And as long as it's not offensive, we will attempt to respond to it. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah.
Goodbye, communism.
Bye.
Hello, capitalism.
До свидания.
Bye.
Bye.
Think we nailed it.